On December 6, 1966, when I was a little more than a year and a half old, Major Begley's fighter jet was shot down by a MiG-17 over North Vietnam. Major Begley radioed that he was losing power and altitude. He was trying to make it across the Red River before ejecting. Someone observed that his aircraft was hit in the tail. Debris was seen falling away from his plane. The Air Force thinks his aircraft crashed just south of the river. No one saw his parachute. Major Begley was declared missing in action. In April of 1978, the Air Force declared that he was killed in action, but no body was ever recovered. In 1986, the government of Vietnam repatriated the remains it asserted for those of Major Begley, but the U.S. determined that there were insufficient remains for biological identification. Officially, Burris Begley remains missing somewhere near the Red River. The Air Force believes that he never survived the plane crash. However, in a recent declassified war document, an eyewitness said that he had seen Major Begley's name scratched into the floor of a small bamboo prison in North Vietnam. I was a young boy. The Vietnam War was in its final years. I barely understood what was going on back then, but I was old enough to know that the war was being fought in a faraway place, in rain-filled jungles, in rice paddies, in overgrown bamboo forests, in grass-thatched villages, on beachheads, along winding, muddy rivers, and in crowded, noisy cities where GIs took their R&R and drowned themselves in warm beer and prostitutes. It was 1973, and the war was being fought on TV. Several men from my hometown went off to fight the war because they had to, or if they objected, or if they were too afraid, or if they were un-American, they escaped to Canada, where they smoked dope and lived as hippies on communes. If you were a communist and you went to Canada, you could never come home again, or the army would put you into prison. There was one guy in the neighborhood who went to Canada instead of the war, and we never heard from him again until years later, when someone learned that he was selling insurance in Cleveland. Another guy from our neighborhood, he went to the war as a Marine, and he stepped on a landmine during Easter 1972 as the VPA attacked from Cambodia and overran the northern provinces, nearly cutting the country in half. His legs were severed above the knee, and his mother hemmed his pants so they fit his stumps. He wore a black felt patch over his right eye, like a pirate, with a long red scar that slashed his face in two. Before he came home, his family built a wooden ramp onto the front of their house so they could wheel him into the living room. Before long, he was wheeling himself around the house, and soon he was driving a car with special levers on the dashboard. Once, in the first autumn after he came home from Vietnam, the Marine came home so drunk that he drove his wheelchair off the porch, and he lay there in the October frost, unconscious, until his mother found him on her way to work. For nearly a year, he would scream in his sleep. One Saturday afternoon in the spring of 1974, my mother took me shopping downtown for new shoes. There, next to Benson's department store, a man in a maroon beret sat at a card table. He wore mirrored aviator sunglasses and an olive green fill jacket. A purple scar ran down his right forearm, where a greenish tattoo of a lightning bolt was split in two by the scar. On the table before him were silver metallic bracelets that he said were reminders of those who were missing in action or prisoners of war. Each bracelet was engraved with the name of a serviceman, his rank, and a date. Perhaps the date he went missing in action or the date he was captured. For a small donation, the man in the beret with the purple scar would sell you a bracelet. I noticed that he himself wore a bracelet on his right arm. His other arm was missing. The point was to wear these bracelets in patriotic support of a serviceman until he was found and came home, hopefully alive, perhaps dead. So I bought a bracelet, and I wore it every day for a few weeks. Eventually, I lost interest in it, and it ended up in a shoebox beside my nightstand, along with some old Army uniform patches, a Marine survival knife, and a spent M16 shell casing. Eventually, the war ended, but Major Begley, the man on my bracelet, never came home.